Project Lawful aka Plane Crash by Yarwane aka Eliezer Yudkowsky and Lynn Tamande. My fun research project has more existential risk than I anticipated. Episode 123.
PL timestamp, day 1713, night.
Yo, Carissa, good time for Keltham to try that security test with the heating stone and keeping detect magic running?
Works for her. Carissa is intensely curious how Keltham will handle pain. Optimistically, maybe Dathi Lan has been lying to him and he'll realize there's a place for it. Pessimistically, maybe Dathi Lani are different and pain is actually just bad for them. In which case, she's going to need to figure out how to use them in hell. It would be incredibly wasteful to just have all resentful Doth Ilani turn into paving stones because no one can figure out anything better. And she's not optimistic. Anyone else is going to figure out something better.
Keltham would be so confused if he knew what Carissa was thinking. What is there to be curious about? Pain is ouch and bad. If it's severe pain, you use mental disciplines to dissociate from it as much as possible. Masochists apparently get sexually aroused by it, and submissives feel dominated by it. Both facts entirely irrelevant to Keltham, who is neither. Dathi Lani try to keep themselves simple, so that their theories of themselves can be simple without being false. All self-models are potential traps, but complicated self-models are actual traps, goes the proverb out of Dathi Lan. If Dathi Lani seem complex to the eyes of another world, it's perhaps because they are using some unfamiliar simplicities. Shorter words in baseline. Pain is bad and I don't like it is a perfectly reasonable way for a mind to be, and correspondingly a helpfully simple thing for a theory of the self to accurately say.
Keltham notices that part of him is less than cheerful about the fact that Carissa was available, since now an ouch bad thing will happen to him. Keltham notices that part of him is scared he's going to perform so unimpressively that Carissa will fall out of love with him. Keltham proceeds to the cuddle room anyways. It's not that this is a sexy thing, per se, but that the cuddle room is in fact where the heating stone from Subarx's collection happens to be. Carissa, I notice that I'm more scared of performing poorly on this test and you thinking I'm unworthy than I am wincing about the upcoming pain. Any strictly truthful remarks that come to mind about that?
Dathi Lani, answer. I expect you won't be very good at it, so if you're in fact not very good at it, then that won't shift what I think of you, because I could just go ahead and think it now. And you'd properly be compared to other people who just learned cantrips. Anyway, not combat wizards with years of training, and even if you do badly by that comparison, it's not like I picked you for your security wizarding ability.
He notices himself wanting to say lots of things to Carissa, asking her if this is something he really needs to do, telling her about the letter from Abigail and what he thought about that, and how that's why he decided he needed to do this. Explain in detail his theory of how, in fact, he has to do this tonight, because otherwise it's just going to go on nagging at him with the anticipation making it worse. While Keltham is noticing himself wanting to do all these things, he has gone ahead and touched the heating stone to his left arm, spoken the command word once to attach it and again to turn on the heating effect, and cast and caught detect magic. Of this, there is also a discipline out of Dathi Ilan, which is to just go do the thing, the...
At first, it doesn't even hurt too badly. It's like touching a hot plate of food, not like touching an open burner, at first. But when you touch a hot thing like that, you put it down, and if you don't, then it does start hurting. Every round, Keltham needs to make a concentration check with a steadily increasing DC. He rolls surprisingly well, actually. It's a full minute before he loses the spell, and even then it's a close thing. It's about 20 seconds after that he rips the awful thing off his arm.
If by that you mean that Keltham speaks the command word to detach it, ripping it off is a mistake he won't make. He visualized that process in advance. Before Keltham channels positive energy to heal himself, he'll see whether he can still cast and catch light under his present circumstances.
It takes a lot more deliberate effort to concentrate than usual, but yes.
Keltham will give himself a further minute to experiment with trying out the disciplines that are supposedly supposed to help with dissociating from pain. There are lessons you can sign up for in Dathi Lan to get actual practice with that in advance. They are considered ill-advised consumerism for most normal people who probably won't need them because, like, You will remember that pain. Had Keltham known of his future trip to Galerion, obviously he would have taken those lessons, and a lot of other lessons too. Has Carissa been reacting to any of this at all?
She's pretty sure she should not look like she's taking detailed notes for future reorganization of Hell purposes. That would raise questions she is not planning on answering right now. So she will just be patiently, adorably attentive, and have a healing spell of her own ready in case he forgets how in a panic or something. He's not handling it that badly, but still.
At least Carissa doesn't look openly horrified at his performance. Not that she would. Yeah, it's not actually much in the way of likelihood ratio. Channel positive expected healing energy and done.
Snuggle. I am very curious what you thought of that, she says truthfully.
Tell you in a moment. Part of me is a lot more worried about what you thought of that. I'm being nice to that part, so you first.
It's longer than I expected. To the extent I was forming expectations, which I was trying not to because it'd stress you out. Also, I really, really want to problem solve you being nervous what I'll think of you, but probably this is not the time.
I'm aware. My guess is that it gets resolved by time, by success at mining Spellsilver, by sufficient deep-down confidence in not conspiracy that I start actually trusting truth spells, and by some advice I recently got from Abigail. Advice that made me think again about whether I'd been holding back and delaying on flinchy feeling things I should do to adapt to Galerion. This was part of that, and I don't know what I was expecting. It was an ouchy bad thing, very ouchy, very bad. It made it hard to concentrate. I would probably need more practice to dissociate from it per standard disciplines. Well enough to even leave it on my arm for 10 minutes, never mind maintaining detect magic through it. I'm not really feeling like more of a native to Galerion as a result. Maybe I should have taken more time to focus on the injury and experience the fear that healing wasn't real or wouldn't work, so I'd have updated more on injuries being temporary and pain being less of an important signal after I healed myself.
Huh. A thing I get out of pain is a sense of myself as something distinct from all the inputs I'm getting, as something stronger than those. And it's a, not a nice feeling exactly, but an important one, one I seek out. I don't know if that's what you mean by dissociate from it.
No, that's sort of denying the pain's meaning, denying it as something that's a part of you, as opposed to just being there, severing the feelings and thoughts downstream of it.
Huh. And a sense of delight and power from the fact that this is happening and you're enduring it and the thing you are is untouchable by it?
No, not even slightly. That's like somebody who's not a keeper, but who has a lot more dignity than I do, seeing evidence that, say specifically, a startup founder realizing their brilliant company is inevitably failing, updating and throwing away one of their most cherished hopes, a kind of awfulness that means something, that you want to not look away from because the details are part of reality, and your pride is to accept reality, whatever that is, and where the unpleasantness is part of the process of you becoming a different and better person. And to update correctly in the face of that is your skill and your art and your mastery, which you would execute correctly even if everything else was turning to ash around you. I cannot say that I have ever in my life heard it suggested that anybody would want to relate to physical pain that way. It's something you'd want to experience as little as possible. The details of it are the last thing you want. If you were paying attention to it, it would be so. You could do the thing where you pay a lot of attention to an emotion and question what it means and look at the perception in so much detail that you've killed the emotion, which, to be clear, is something that's generally considered a hazardous thing to do to one of your emotions.
So, it might be that this is a fundamental difference between Dathilani and Chelish people, but when you say that, the first thing I jump to is actually just that Dathilani are wrong about this and missing out.
Prieti, sure, it's that fundamental difference one.
If you can choose how you relate to things at all, even a little, with practice, I don't see why you wouldn't relate to physical pain that way. Not seek it out, maybe, but have the skill to relate to it in that fashion when it comes up.
I'm not sure I can. It feels like a type error. It's pretty easy to imagine. The direction I'd have to move in, even if for now I've chosen not to go there, to become somebody who could burn his current personality to ash by borrowing Asmodia's headband for an hour, and take pride in his dignity for accepting the hurt and updating. Doing that with pain? I don't know what series of mental changes I'd even try to do that, regardless of whether or not I want to. Physical pain doesn't mean things the way that thoughts do.
Sure, but the way I relate to it does mean things, and pain as I experience it is a combination of whatever raw input I'm getting and how I'm relating to it.
I'd definitely have been proud of myself if I'd been able to run through 10 minutes holding detect magic on my first try. I'm thinking that you mean something else by all this, but I want to check to make sure I'm not in fact overcomplicating things and missing something that's supposed to be very simple and obvious.
That is not what she means. What she means is that suffering is a fundamental part of the human experience, and that relating to it with strength and joy and satisfaction feels about as basic and fundamental as being able to relate to anything else that way. But she's not sure she should say that. That's not the thing, no. I mean, that is very satisfying, achieving something despite it being painful, but I mean, something you can do even if you, I don't know, accidentally injure yourself by walking into a table. Just orienting to that experience as something like a startup founder getting bad news, it really seems to me like something anyone ought to be able to do.
Well, any sex worker in civilization who can do that, even if she's not sexually aroused by the pain, so long as she's present, participating, doesn't hate it, isn't just enduring it for money, if it means something to her that isn't negative and doesn't completely trash the rest of sex, is no doubt very, very, very rich.
I wonder if this explains the good people who hate hell, if they're like you that way, and assuming everyone is like them.
In baseline, typical mind fallacy. We got training in not doing that, not assuming everyone else was like ourselves. So, presumably, everybody in Galarian by default runs off and assumes everyone else's brain works like their own.
Yep, that sounds about right. But it's a pretty big problem how hell is where everyone should go.
Think I'll try attaching the stone to my arm again, just to see if I can possibly do your thing, even though it seems like I obviously can't.
Huh. I really hope that works.
97% it won't. But don't worry. We get training in being able to do things without being influenced by our belief we can't do them. Don't suppose it counts, by the way, if I'm also doing this out of my masculine gender trope, and to prove that the pain isn't able to drive me away from doing this again.
Maybe. If the way you related to pain was having as part of your gender trope that you are tough and pain is irrelevant to you, it can't touch the thing that you are, that'd be closer to where I am than the thing you just described.
Just the tough part. I expect that pain in sufficient quantities can touch the thing that I am, break it or erase it in the flood of negative feedback, neural circuits being neural-trained out of existence by the constant enormous error signal everything gets. What I'm proving is that this quantity of pain is not that amount. There's a saying out of Dathylon, I have a price, but I'm not cheap. Now quiet a moment while I actually try this. I want to concentrate.
Obedient, quiet Carissa. It can't possibly be this easy, but it would be really nice if it could.
Keltham puts the stone on his arm, dissociating from the part of himself that wants to flinch, and destroying by reflection the fear of just that action itself, which is not itself the pain. He waits until his brain understands that the stone itself is not the pain. He tries to put himself into the frame of mind of somebody who relates to the coming pain, as if that were dignity, as if he were proud of how it cannot touch him, leaving the core of him unchanged. What's the equivalent for pain? Of I am not my beliefs, I am that which updates them, I am not my plans, I am that which chooses them. Keltham is not his pain. He's the thing that is unmoved by it. Negative neural feedback does, in fact, sort of move people, though. Keltham is not his desire not to be in pain. Keltham sort of thinks he is made out of, among other things, desires like that one. Carissa, temporary not quiet. Do you know what the equivalent should be of, I am not my beliefs, I am that which updates them, I am not my plans, I am that which chooses them, for pain? This, the second layer of impartiality, Keltham speaks in baseline.
That feels like such an important question, and she's never thought about it at all. I'm not sure, but maybe I am not what I sense. I am that which makes sense of it.
All right, then. I am not my sensory input. I am that which interprets it. He doesn't really see that helping, but he'll try to take that mental posture anyways, and take pride in being unmoved by the pain, a sense of delight that it cannot destroy him. Keltham speaks the command word twice.
Carissa prays very, very sincerely to Asmodeus to show Keltham whatever it is, if Asmodeus even knows it, that Keltham needs here.
He takes slightly longer to get to the point of calling it off this time.
And remembers this time to look at the burn left on his arm, the seared tissue that he let just go on getting damaged and damaged. Remembers to feel the fear that he's maimed himself for life, that healing won't work for him this time. That physical injury is real and lasting and scary and destroys your life ever after, until you have to go step into the future and leave your friends behind, not to be seen again, unchanged, because your life is so much less happy now, and your friends wouldn't want you to stick it out just for them. And heal. Yeah, that basically didn't work, even while I had enough concentration left to try to make it work. The pain kept calling my attention back to it, trying to say that I was the mind interpreting pain instead of identifying with the sensory input, didn't help. Telling myself that I was strong and delighting that I could pass through it didn't help. What helped was either dissociating from it or my attention briefly going elsewhere before it got yanked back. But actual plus side, I remembered to experience the fear of injury and watch healing work against that. I think I'll have an easier time asking for martial arts training from security now, because Keltham is rather in doubt of his own ability to subdue and chain even Meritzel, with just a bull's strength and cat's grace, and Doth Ilani self-defense only, or group-safe subdual skills.
Huh. Well, I'm sorry it didn't work. I think that might mean there are certain kinds of devils you don't get to be, but I'm not sure that was on your agenda anyway. If security does their jobs, you shouldn't need martial arts training? Though I'm sure they'll help if you want.
It seems important to truly living in Galarian that I stop mentally living in a place where major injuries can't be healed and result in permanent decreases in quality of life. I expect martial arts training to help with that, if it's the kind of training that you wouldn't do in Doth Ilani, because consequences. He's going to learn that first, get over the simple shock of inflicting and receiving physical violence, and then come back to the question of how he feels about violently physically subduing Carissa, given that it means something deep and positive to her and her sexuality.
Nod. Makes sense. And I guess we might eventually want to go places not surrounded by bodyguards, once Nidal's defeated, and any other gods that need it.
That thought had not particularly occurred to me. I think that's more a question of having endless spell silver and enchanters to make our defenses, rather than being able to punch harder than anything that tries to punch us, or, you know, toss a dozen fireballs at us, which I am not really seeing the punching thing helping with, but what do I know? My bedtime should be soon. Did you want to try the heating stone yourself, while my handy healing is around?
Yes, I do.
Keltham hands it over to her. Probability you do this on the first try? I've got mine, but it'll be overridden by your probability as soon as you say it.
30%? It wouldn't be a test to be security if most people with the relevant combat experience could do it on the first try, or even if they could mostly do it on the 10th.
Huh. Fair point. I was at 70, so if you don't do it, I'll know I was undercorrecting for Carissa being less exceptional in this quality relative to Galarian security wizard candidates than she'd be in Doth Ilani.
I do bet I won't ask you to take it off at any point in the 10 minutes, just I bet I slip up at the cantrip at some point. And she tries it. There is something there. Even if Keltham's not the kind of entity that can understand it, the sharpness of it, the ways that every instant becomes momentous and significant, the parts of her mind she can feel come alive as she tries to marshal more of herself towards the task than she ordinarily could. It's awful, of course, but she doesn't mind. She really doesn't. She wishes Keltham could have this. She loses the cantrip 6 minutes in. doesn't ask him to stop, just makes a small, sad sound and tries a different cantrip. Holds that one until the end.
Do you want healing on that?
Why does he always have so many questions? Non-committal sound.
Yes. Yes, you're right. I shouldn't have asked you anything. I should have noticed there was something I wanted without you prompting me to check that within myself. I still haven't been out of my lawful good world for 2 weeks, okay? Let's try you out on a different task that requires concentration while you're in pain. He'll attach the heating stone somewhere, turn it on, and see if that impacts her skill.
Carissa is confused for a little while until she puts together, oh, he thought that was hot, watching her in pain. That makes sense. That makes the whole attempt much better, somehow, if Keltham was enjoying it. It's like Abigail petting her and telling her she suffered beautifully. Also, she can at this point make him apologize for being lawful good just with non-committal noises, which is progress, if not nearly as good as him actually being evil. She will do her tired and distracted best to please.
Him seeing her in pain will more than make up for any hitches in her skill when it comes to succeeding in her task. Any unorchestrated reactions there at this relatively low level of awful pain?
Yes. Getting your Carissa extremely tired from 10 minutes of very difficult magic practice is a good way to get her to forget to overthink everything about her life and reactions and relationship.
He is really, really happy, and will tell her so once she's all finished, and he's taken off the heating stone from her and healed her. Carissa, in so much pain with her hips writhing as she tries to serve him, is the hottest thing that there is, and he's proud of owning her, and he felt powerful for making her do this. In pain. Just because he wanted it. And he's proud of himself for having done some of the work on reshaping her with pain to naturally express feelings again. And he's so in love with her, and he doubts any other woman will ever be able to compete. If this is something that's in Asmodeus's utility function, and Asmodeus helped Keltham get it for Asmodeus's own purposes, Keltham still acknowledges the favor owed. Ending the day like this was the correct decision. Including the part where he went through some self-inflicted pain he'd been putting off, and now doesn't have to put off anymore. He feels generally better, and though it's not a promise and only time will resolve the prediction market, he predicts good skill for his next day's work on the project.
You know what would be nice is if it was someone's job to tell Carissa telepathically if this was actually a good outcome, or if she's just absurdly susceptible to people saying nice things while they hurt her. Abarco didn't say any nice things while he hurt her. Probably, it's fine. Not sure you said proud of owning me before.
Probably not. But Abigail's letter to me called you my possession a lot. And, you know, fine. If that means I get to keep you. He boops her on the nose. Socially underscore constructed imaginary ownership underscore tag, pointing to Keltham. If any food crops grow on you, nobody else gets to eat them.
She beams at him wordlessly for a while. She is pretty sure that is actually quite good news for the project and doesn't just seem like that because aforementioned susceptibility to people who are nice while they hurt her. Love you so much. Not totally sure you understand still, but yes. Imaginary ownership tag points to Keltham and you'd be terrified by all that means, but it's good. It's really good.
Any parts I don't already know about need to be spelled out and agreed to by me before they take effect. Knowing this, any terror that needs to be handled at that time is my future self's problem. Unless there is still cause for my present self to be terrified, given that, in which case you should notify me so. The law governing these matters does tend to imply that, if I would predictably panic later, I should panic now. Problem #6 on conservation of expected evidence, emotional conjugation thereof. Should no such further notification be required, however, you are permitted to just cuddle instead of replying.
Snuggle. Yes, course. It's not stuff you're supposed to do anyway, just stuff that wouldn't get you kicked out of any cities because people would see the imaginary tag and go, well, in that case, it's all right. I'm not making any sense, am I? All my sense goes and flies away when you hurt me enough. No terror. You don't need to be scared.
Good, good. There shall be additional snuggles then. In time, Keltham shall stagger off somewhat tiredly to his proper bed. The thought that he could also just go to sleep in his cuddle room will not, in fact, occur to him.
Her boyfriend is a ridiculous alien, but one who said that he considered himself to owe Asmodeus a favor if Asmodeus helped him get this. She puts herself together and drags herself out of bed.
Cookie from Snack Service. Apparently you recently had some sort of unanswered wish or question that I can help you with, somehow. Not my curse, me.
Huh, I don't know. Security, can we get a thought transcript?
Message. They could, but security is guessing this is about the part where Carissa Savar recently thought that she wished somebody had the job of telepathically telling her whether this was a good outcome. Security did notice that part, what with him being telepathic, but that not, in fact, being part of his job.
Right. Probably.
Pilar will, of course, wait patiently for further instruction or questions.
I thought a couple of minutes ago that I wished there was someone whose job it was to tell me if I'd done well or not. I have to say, it's very weird that Caden Kalian is watching my sex life closely enough to catch that.
It's a very weird to be called upon by Caden Kalian to give somebody else Asmodean theological advice when I'm not a priest of Asmodeus, but I kind of do think I know. Should I say it, sir?
Go ahead.
Ask your superior, the one set over you. If Subirax doesn't know, she'll ask the Most High or the Queen. Your superiors will tell you how well you did, and then whatever they say is the truth, and you're done. And it's not your place to worry about it anymore, because that would be contradicting what your superiors told you. It's one of the nice things Asmodeans get to have. That's not why Asmodeus wants it that way. But it's definitely what he wants. Snack Service suggests you take a nap first, though.
All right. If your curse ever turns on us, I'm going to figure out how to torture a curse, and then I'm going to really, really enjoy torturing it to death.
Pilar thinks, but doesn't say, that if Savar managed to really, really enjoy torturing anyone or anything to death, it would probably be good for the condition of her soul, because saying that would be insolent to her superior. That must be why Pilar isn't saying it.
Carissa will go take a nap. It probably is good advice, and anyway, it's late.
PL timestamp, day 17, 13, long night.
Carissa sleeps half an hour, wakes up, contemplates sleeping some more, decides that actually she's just dawdling, goes to Subirax.
Subirax has had this matter brought to her attention by security and has already reviewed transcripts. Her judgment is that Savar was not going into subspace. She was correctly estimating that this was excellent good news on the surface of things. What lies underneath the surface of things remains questionable, and it is unfortunately among Savar's primary jobs as leader of Project Lawful to question it, so she cannot just relax and take her superior's word about how well things are going. Subirax can confirm that Keltham's overt behavior looked like excellent news to her. Subirax cannot, and the Most High, and the Queen probably cannot, speak to whether all of this is some incredible plot by Caden Kalian of which Asmodeus is unaware. If that's so, it would in fact fall to Savar to not just watch for that possibility, but think about it. She cannot take on the duty of a simple slave here, alas. But if Savar is wondering whether she was just imagining things, no, she wasn't. That looked like progress to Subirax, too. Producing that kind of progress is not all of Savar's given duty, but it is a large part of it, especially when it comes to the sort of duty that anyone has any idea how to do. And by anyone, Subirax means the chosen of Asmodeus, because nobody else seems to be able to make any progress on it except Pilar and Yaisa, as prompted by Snack Service.
This particular progress felt almost entirely self-prompted by Keltham, maybe with some help from Her Majesty, whose letter he seemed to find fascinating. But it does seem like good news. Possibly corrupting Keltham will just work, and in a couple of months they'll be able to mostly stop lying. They should proceed on the assumption that's not going to be the case, though. Does Subirax have advice or correction?
Intelligent slaves can sometimes learn to take joy in more complicated judgments of their superiors than, "You did that perfectly." There's also, "You did that as well as mortals ever do under their circumstances." Even Pilar, when she got back from Elysium, had Aspexia Rugaton list out everything she did wrong and was assigned punishment before Aspexia Rugaton told her that she'd done as well as mortals ever do and reminded Pilar that pride was also among Asmodeus's domains. If tomorrow this all ends and they all go to hell for it, and learn that it only worked to Caden Kalian's own plans in the end, Subirax thinks that hell would not account them disobedient nor more incompetent than usual for mortals. They did receive visions of Asmodeus and orders out of hell, and they followed them, and worked as best they could at what seemed to be their task, despite their doubts. If you are past the whiny idea that hell should accept that as a full excuse and not punish you at all for failing, then Subirax imagines that hell would be accepting about it, if not forgiving. Obedience and working diligently at one's task are what Asmodeus demands of mortals. He is glad, perhaps, when his mortals succeed in advancing his interests, but obedience and diligence to his instructions are what it is, Asmodeus's nature as a god to demand. Saevar was instructed by her superiors to seduce Kel'thim to Asmodeus. She dangled before him the prize of her sexuality to conquer. He found himself challenged, driven, proud upon the matter. And Kel'thim has now, self-prompted, attached a heating stone to her while making sexual use of her, named himself her owner, and taken pride in how he's already reshaped her through torment. Some types of slaves of Asmodeus, including, Subirax thinks, Saevar herself, are more useful to Asmodeus when they allow themselves to ever feel pleasure about a job apparently well done. You can see how it could go wrong if those slaves went around telling themselves about jobs they thought were well done all the time. But when your superior tells you that you have been a good slave, it is just plain allowed to be proud of that. It is true, because they say so. Over and done. This is what Pilar was trying to tell Saevar, is one of the nice things that Asmodeans are allowed to have. Pilar, being strong in her faith, was able to set aside her continuing fear of Caden Kaelian's machinations after the Most High told her that she, Pilar, had done as well as mortals ever do in willingly returning from Elysium, that Pilar had done her own part as a slave, well enough to deserve some pride, whatever the manipulations of gods around her. That Pilar had done well was then unshakably true for her, not because Pilar believed the Most High was infallible, but because her superior had told Pilar so, and that is how slavery works under Asmodeus. It wasn't Pilar's place to question her having done well. That you can sometimes be certain of having done well is one of the nice things that Asmodeans get to have. That's not why Asmodeus does it, but it's definitely how he wants it done. Saevar has done well.
It feels not Doth Ilani, and Carissa's first instinct is to just not think about that right now, but it feels like it won't land like it should, like a complete and wonderful and comforting answer until she's thought it through. So, can something be unshakably true? Obviously, there is an objective fact of the matter about whether Carissa is doing well enough, and she and her superiors could be wrong about it. They could mistakenly think she is doing well enough, when actually she's not doing well enough, and tomorrow it'll all come crashing down. But they can't be wrong about whether Carissa is a good Asmodean, whether she did a good job as an Asmodean, is what Subirax is saying, what Pilar was saying, because that's not an objective fact of the world, to be falsified by it. It's a ownership tag, like property rights, something about the world that is how it is because we say that's how it's so, and she hasn't yet worked out all the desirable properties that produced Asmodeus's specific system of tagging, but the tag for Carissa says she did well here, and even if she screws up tomorrow, it'll say she did well up to this point. That is just true, and Subirax has the power to make it so. Right. I think I understand now. I am pleased to be of service to Lord Asmodeus and to Kelyax.
I intend to commend this continuing progress to the Queen's attention and suggest that she reward you by sending here a subordinate enchanter to assist on your crafting projects.
Oh, that would be nice. Both the queen being informed part, which was obviously going to happen, but still Carissa's pleased about it, and the project help, which will maybe let her only do the interesting parts of making the glibness swords, if she can explain to someone else the obvious things you have to do when you're making a sword tiny. Asmodeans, she thinks, aren't supposed to deserve rewards for good work. She doesn't ask. It'd be halfway insubordinate. But the question is there if Subirax is reading her mind.
Asmodeans don't think they deserve rewards for good work. You do it, or you get punished. And you don't ever start thinking you're owed anything for your work. It is sometimes useful to your superiors, and at other times simply their whim, that you receive rewards even though it is impossible that you deserve them. On this occasion, it is useful because it will remind you that your superiors hold the power to reward as well as to punish, which is something that often matters to someone's emotions when it comes to it being made true that you have done right because your superior says so. It is useful because it will nurture your pride. There's also the fact that what you're actually getting is, in fact, assistance that will make you more useful to Cheliax, advance your project for Cheliax, and free up some of your time that was going to be spent on things less important to Cheliax. I am explaining all this explicitly, as should not usually be done with a slave, because it is something you must learn alongside the uses of pain. A little less urgently, perhaps, but it will not go well for the project if you do not know how to use rewards alongside torment, including that the rewarding not be done in such a way as that it comes to feel deserved, which, for those less Asmodean than Pilar, often follows along immediately from reward coming to feel expected.
I understand. As should not usually be done with a slave reminds her of something that she doesn't know what to do with, something that still feels confusing, but she has no idea how to put it into words. It's something about how she's not Keltham's slave because of how she's running an elaborate conspiracy against him, and actually she thinks that the true key to who Carissa is has as much to do with the conspiracy as it does with getting hit. But she's not his. If he learned the whole truth tomorrow and agreed to stay, then it really would be real. She isn't sure what answer she's looking for here, or even what question she has, but it's a vague uneasy that is not obviously just vague unease because I'm being a heretic, or vague unease because I stupidly fell in love.
You remarked earlier of how you were trying to really be Keltham's slave, because you desired that, if he wholly converted to evil, you selfishly wanted for that Keltham, your greatest accomplishment, to consider your punishment warranted to be one you could withstand. You are being a true slave to that Keltham, the Keltham who will be. He would want his current self freed of his chains.
Nod. All right, I want to do one more practice run of Keltham gets around to asking questions about slavery. I think Asmodea wanted to do the predictions collector that Keltham told us about in lecture. I want to test the new arrivals in person on their understanding of the objectives here, and I was thinking I should take my punishment for thinking dismissively of Asmodeus tonight, when Keltham's going to be noticing things consistent with my having been in pain in the morning anyway.
You're also thinking you should take your punishment tonight, I would guess, because I have not seen it in your thoughts, and perhaps neither have you, but you saw that even Keltham was getting around to doing painful, unpleasant things. Part of you wondered deep down if you're really as strong as you think, having not yet gotten around to your own unpleasant thing. Somehow. You are better at enduring torment, but are you better at getting around to it? You saw that Keltham was learning how to use torment faster than you are indeed. Some inner part of you is feeling competitive. Your inner part thinks it's because he's Dathilani, but it's not. It's because he's actually getting around to practicing and pushing his limits. You instinctively don't want to start expecting rewards. You're justly afraid of what will happen to you if you do that. There are wordless parts of you that are starting to appreciate that pain now has a use in preventing yourself from flying too high and incurring worse pain later. That wordless part of you is in fact correct about that. It is indeed wise for you to take your punishment now, after having just heard of your good work made true and your undeserved reward, given that it must come to you at some time or another. These are not certain guesses, but they are obvious ones.
Yes, I think you're right. I think that I should go to a temple in Ostenso, just an ordinary one that won't recognize me, with a punishment code for thinking disrespectfully of Asmodeus.
To humble your pride? That's a true question. I can guess your intuition here, but not know it yet. You did not think it in words.
Sort of. To stop thinking of punishing myself as something that has to be done exactly right, for me to benefit from it, instead of something that I have to get good at benefiting from, regardless of what exactly it is.
Chosen, you are slaver now, and not only slave. You need to think of torments as tools that have effects. Rugaton assigned you this task specifically so that you would learn to use torture, not only because you were starting to be reckless. If you learn how to benefit from any random torment you are given, you will not have learned something useful for ruling over Project Lawful, because they won't have that skill. Bluntly, Savar, you have a mental block on choosing torments and not just enduring them. You have a block against it even when that makes no sense from the standpoint of either Asmodeus's interests or your own. You refused me specific input on what instruments I should requisition to lend to Keltham, though admittedly with some fortuitous results. You refused me specific input on how to punish you for your failure in the game you designed, after I told you that you would regret not being specific. You will not go in with a punishment code for heresy and leave the exact choice of torment to the temple. You will think about what exactly could be done to you. You will think about its probable effect on you. You will decide on a punishment that you think will teach you not to disrespect Asmodeus in the future. You will actually undergo this punishment. You will not let them assign you some torment you didn't choose, and then try to learn the intended lesson regardless. It's a reasonable thing for an Asmodean to want to learn, but it is not what Aspexia Rugaton told you to learn.
Us acknowledged. But she doesn't want to try to come up with specific. That's really stupid now that it's out in the open. But she doesn't expect the specifics matter. That's also probably stupid. Of course the specifics matter. In any other kind of teaching, the specifics matter a lot. Is there a better objection lying there? If you were trying to explain what Abigail did to Carissa, you would not get anywhere by saying that she let Carissa run around for a while, then lit her on fire a couple of times, then carved runes into her skin, then petrified her. Those are all things that happened, but they aren't the operative ingredients of the thing that happened. Abigail started with an aim in mind, to drive Carissa into a particular state, and then picked tools that produced that state. Why is it hard to relate to herself that way? She wants to get Carissa into a particular state. She wants to become the competent Ilani Asmodean that she'll need to be for all the work she has ahead. So, what are the tools for that job? Well, obviously, lectures from Keltham and from the High Priestess, those are tools for the job. But they're not punishments. Having someone sear Asmodeus's holy symbol into her skin with a hot poker is not counterproductive for making her the competent Ilani Asmodean she's supposed to be. It's unpleasant, so it's serving one of the purposes of punishment. It can drive her to the state of miserable desperation where she wishes she had not erred. It is obviously a satisfactory response. But it feels stupid. It feels unsatisfactory as a result to how do you make Carissa better? Like, you'd never come up with that if you were starting from scratch. If she were starting from scratch and someone thought disrespectfully about Asmodeus, what would she do after she explained their error? Maybe have them talk to a devil much smarter than them and be punished for every error in their understanding. That seems like it'd inculcate the appropriate sense of how those who command us are wiser than us and have thought more deeply, and we should not assume them stupid. But she's already got a bit of a problem where punishments need to feel big and dramatic to suit her, and that's simply not sustainable on a society-wide scale.
Well, Now the Chosen seems to be trying to invent the entire Illani theory of torture from scratch on the spot, and Jacinth's not going to interrupt that or comment on it until Sivar gets visibly stuck. Possibly some of the problem here may be that Sivar has been tortured by Abigail and taught by Keltham, and is now trying to hold her own concept of corrective torture to that frankly ludicrous standard in both respects, to the point where everything she can think of as a beginner seems so awful that she can't think of anything. That kind of perfectionistic mental block can develop in professional-level slaves, or so Jacinth has heard.
Carissa is actually thinking that since she's just starting out, it'd be all right if whatever she comes up with is only half as useful per unit of time as Abigail at torture and half as useful per unit of time as Keltham at teaching. You don't get the Star Stone by standing at the moat daydreaming about it. What things can you at least sometimes get from torture? Person regrets having done the thing they did. In this specific case, Carissa already regrets it because it was incorrect. She isn't sure she needs additional regretting it. No, better to think, she isn't sure why she needs additional regretting it. What does regretting it past the point of having been corrected achieve? Possibly it inculcates habits against similar mistakes. Not only will you not make this mistake again, you won't make related mistakes either. Or maybe there's something like, you have both a conscious and a subconscious system for arriving at beliefs, and arguments speak to the conscious one, and pain speaks to the unconscious one, and to actually stop making mistakes, you need them corrected on both levels. That feels right. It feels like the sort of premise you could build something like Cheliacs on and explain it to someone like Keltham. So assume for now it's true. The dumbest, most straightforward kind of punishment to align the subconscious with truth would be, when you think something wrong, you instantly receive a painful shock until your brain learns not to have thoughts like that. Unfortunately, Cheliacs doesn't have the resources to deliver punishments instantly, which is why much of what punishment is must be internalized. You instantaneously feel a sense of terror at the thought you just had, and unpleasant anticipation of the eventual punishment, and that dread is what keeps your mind in line with truth. And then the actual punishment is just to deliver on the promise and keep the dread around for next time. But there seems to be a problem with that. Peranza's problem could be diagnosed in part as that she has installed self-punishment for so many of her thoughts that even when she's allowed to think them, she can't, and everyone thinks she's at the highest risk of having a meltdown and becoming unsalvageable. So punishment needs to be designed to avoid the failure mode where the subconscious correction fires excessively, even at thoughts that are necessary for achieving Asmodeus's goals. Possibly Cheliacs, as it exists now, isn't very good at avoiding this failure mode because it only comes up when you drop someone into a context sufficiently far outside the one they're familiar with. Pilar doesn't flinch with dread or terror from any of her thoughts, and is a very good Asmodean. She knows she'll be punished sometimes, but she doesn't mind that. Her internal attitude towards it is not one of dread. That seems better. How do you get that? Carissa seems to have dismantled lots of her very important internal processes for punishing herself for thoughts. Some of this she did at Abigail's behest, because thoughts and feelings are tied closely together and Abigail wanted her to stop looking away from her feelings. Some of this she did because the flinches kept getting in the way of figuring out how to do her job. That does put her, though, in a dangerous position. She might fail to flinch away from something she was really, really supposed to flinch away from, and end up condemning Asmodeus. It is worth hurting herself very badly to avoid that. It's just not obvious what kind of hurting her will, in fact, avoid that. She feels like this is an extremely hard case for punishment and not actually a particularly good place to teach her how punishment works. It makes sense for her to be assigning and conducting torture sessions for normal people who it won't be a catastrophe to punish either excessively or insufficiently, but it seems like really someone qualified should be assigning torture sessions to an extremely complicated case who it's catastrophic to err with.
chosen, you are trying again to accomplish too much with one torture session. You are not going to accomplish half as much as the queen in the same time. The thought is almost absolutely absurd. You have been frankly spoiled for how torture works for everyone else. The queen, if she was explaining exactly what she did to you, would know how her carving a series of runes into your skin gave you a sense of approaching dread as the runes visibly approached completion. Or rather, even I know that part. But she would have some plan encompassing that sense of approaching dread, whose diminishing time was a vital part. A reason why your thoughts had to be under an apparent time pressure right then. The queen would have some reason why that carving was exactly as painful as it was, maybe about how much your thoughts were focusing there and on other things she wanted you to think. I don't know, because I'm not Abigail fucking Thrun. I hope for Abarco's sake that the queen has at no point read a full transcript of his rape of you, because she will think that he was doing every single part of it completely wrong. I don't know how she'll think it was completely wrong. If I knew that the queen would have previously made me a para-duchess of Cheliax and attached me to her personal service, I can't hope to match her. I am, after all, nothing but a Seventh Circle priestess of Asmodeus specializing in slavery. If you were literally anyone else but the chosen of Asmodeus, I would tell you to completely give up hope of ever matching the 20th part of the prowess of Abigail Thrun. As it stands, I am telling you to temporarily reduce the scope of your ambitions. Rugaton's words to you were, "You have flown very high and very far, and I think there is starting to be in you some of the recklessness that you saw in Asmodeus." Asmodeus solved her problem by lighting her hand on fire for 30 seconds. Said also the Most High, "Consult with Subarax and devise a punishment for yourself that you expect to restore your cautionary judgment about when to decide in your thoughts that Lord Asmodeus would be a fool. If enduring that torment makes you weaker, if it fails and must be repeated stronger, you will have only yourself to blame for either end." Mark how the Most High did not say that you were to be tortured into absolute loyalty to Asmodeus henceforth, or that you were to never think any such thoughts again. She challenged you to devise a punishment that would restore such cautionary judgment as you might have had before flying so high and far, ordinary caution such as any good Asmodean might have. And if your punishment proves too light, did the Most High say that you would then be deemed a failure and cast into hell? Did she say that in this event the project would descend into catastrophe? No. She said that you might need to be punished again and stronger. You already regret your error. That does, in fact, do most of the work. You still need to be punished to complete that regret, to let something deep inside you know that what was above you was displeased and retains the power to punish. Something deep within you needs to be reminded that your fears are real and not just a payment to be indefinitely deferred. Having Asmodeus's holy symbol seared into you with a hot poker is not something I would assign for this case myself, but it would work, given that you already regret the error. Or rather, it would work if you could manage to stop thinking of it as stupid. Of course, it feels stupid. You're a child taking her first steps, and the standard to which you're holding yourself is Abigail fucking Thrun. It's not how you would restore Carissa Sevar's caution in her thoughts if you were thinking out a plan from scratch. What then? Speaking to a devil and being punished for every error of thought? I doubt Gorthoklik is allowed to offer us such a powerful assistance as that, or that lesser devils even could. That's not a plan for restoring Carissa Sevar's ordinary cautionary judgment. That's a plan for how Keltham, freed of his chains, would remake Pilar Pineda into a devil native to Golarion. But if that seems to you more like it's on the right track than being seared with a pentagram, then perhaps you could ask yourself what would be some vastly less ambitious form of that same plan, such as might be prescribed to Tonya for some serious heresy of thought, and to restore a similar ordinary caution.
This is overwhelming and stressful and infinitely worse than being tortured, and Carissa hates it. Hates how her thoughts are bouncing around between ideas, wants to yell at Subirox, which would at least cause the torturing of Carissa to happen without further deliberate effort required on Carissa's part, wants to slap Subirox, which would get to it even sooner. Instead of that, she crosses to the fireplace, in which a fire is burning merrily, and steps in and curls up in a ball and cries. This is probably not the best solution to any of her problems, but it does solve them. Technically,
she notes a slight flash of pity in herself about how Sevar is trying to learn all this in weeks instead of years, and reflexively crushes the emotion without very much thought other than that. Subirox dispassionately watches Sevar burning in the fireplace, continuing to monitor her thoughts by way of security.
There's some insight here to incorporate into the broader picture about how being in all-consuming pain is much, much better than other things, such as not knowing how to do your job, but she can't flesh it out right now properly because of the all-consuming pain. The mostly consuming pain. The quite a lot of pain, which is nonetheless still leaving a shred of the internal monologue she'd been kind of hoping to shut up. Carissa's working theory, she thinks rather distantly at Subirox, is that Carissae are not meant to decide their punishments because their standards for themselves are too high. This seems like possibly another shard of Illani Asmodeanism, not that she can flesh it out properly either. A punishment from someone else she can endure more or less gracefully, but a punishment for herself can only ever be inadequate, unless it has destroyed that within her which finds everything inadequate, which they do not want.
Subirox waits until Sevar has burned longer than the punishment she would actually have needed to assign herself, then crosses over to the fireplace with quick steps and, not without a touch of cruelty, taps Sevar with resist energy, fire, followed by cure light wounds. Enough, Sevar. I think you are not likely to disrespect Asmodeus in your thoughts again, now that more suffering has come of it for you than simple regret. All that is needful to complete the regret is that the punishment be real. Nothing more than that should have been necessary. It is one reason why Rugaton gave you that first assignment. Almost anything you tried should have worked. If you cannot punish yourself because it is never enough, that is a known slave psychology which would, unfortunately, be a deal safer in a more ordinary slave. It is likely to be connected to other issues. You should, at the very least, be able to invent suggestions for me. And then, believe me if I tell you, some suggestion is good enough. If you cannot believe me about that, it may indicate a flaw in your subordinacy by which not even your superior can punish you enough to set you right and make you clean. And that, Carissa Sevar, is making life harder on yourself than Asmodeus wants of you. Do think about that. Very few people in all Cheliax have occasion to be told it. Ever.
She might need that repeated. It had a lot of steps.
Then she will repeat it all slower. Subirox can be patient when an important slave has otherwise been performing well while loaded down with an unreasonably vast workload.
I think I understand. I'll try to do better. Try to just have a default suggestion which she can put forward with no expectation it will in any way be better than the default thing. Making it good for her is her problem.
You will perhaps acquire more expertise about that as you learn the uses of torment on other personnel within your small tyranny, on whom you will need to practice if you cannot practice on yourself. Do realize, there are people here besides Keltham and his women who can make mistakes. The next time one of those infuriates you, consider experimenting. That seems like a topic for another time, however. For now, I'd suggest that you go take this night's sleep.
Yes, High Priestess? She's right, though. Carissa is falling behind on cruelty lessons. Hopefully, just because she's juggling too many things.
If you wish to support this AI reading and others like it, please visit patreon.com/askwhocastsai. Any help is appreciated. And thank you to executive producer John Doe 7776059.